Today is January 15th, 2024. Here in the United States of America, it's also known as MLK Day. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was a great American, a great patriot, a great statesman, won the Nobel Peace Prize before he was 35 years of age. He is a man whose legacy lives on long beyond the years that he was granted on this earth. On this day, on this MLK Day 2024, we have a very special program for you, and we want to focus on Black female academics in the United States and what's happening with them on some of our most elite campuses, our state university campuses, our private campuses, and otherwise. There is a crisis afoot. It started at Harvard University with Dr. Claudine Gay and has ended tragically in this new year with the death by suicide of Dr. Bonnie Bailey. We honor her today. We remember her today by talking about this and forging a better way forward. I have a very special guest, Dr. Kenya Ayers Palmore. She is the most recent past president of TDDC in Texas, in Fort Worth. That is one of their community colleges there in a large system of over 50,000 students, faculty, and otherwise. And Dr. Palmore has a very unique perspective, as only 1 in 10 Black women are college presidents in the United States. 1 in 10. She was one of that 10. So she is someone that can speak to this with authority, with credibility, with knowledge, and with firsthand experience about the abuse that Black women take in these vaunted positions, the questions, the microaggressions, the way that we are defined and misdefined, and we need to be redefined, which is why I have her on the Redefining Freedom podcast for our first episode of 2024 and kicking off season 6. Let's talk about it. Greetings, everybody. This is your host, Sophia Nelson, and welcome again to a new season of the Redefining Freedom podcast. We are in season 6, if you can believe it. I have a great guest today on Martin Luther King's birthday. Happy Founders Day to the ladies of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated, my sorority. A special shout out to the Vice President of the United States of America, our soror, Kamala Harris. We're very proud of you. Keep up the great work. We're going to talk today on this Martin Luther King Day about African-American women. And we're going to focus on highly educated professional Black women in academia, because there's been a bit of a storm around us lately. Mm-hmm. It all kicked off in December with Dr. Claudine Gay, the first Black president in Harvard's 387-year history. I have with me today Dr. Kenya Ayers Palmore. Dr. Palmore is the most recent past president of Tarrant County Community College in Fort Worth, Texas. It is a system of community colleges with about 50,000 people. She's the first Black woman president, first Black president, I believe, of the campus. And she was number 6. She's the 6th president. So again, historic, someone doing great work over a period of 4 years. And she lost her job recently. It's been in the news. And I'm going to let her get into that because it's a good segue into this topic and how Black women academics are treated. Before we go there, though, I want to say a little bit about her background. She, of course, holds a PhD from the University of Houston with a doctorate in education and administration and supervision. And then she has a master's degree in clinical psychology from the University of Michigan. And my favorite part of her is the ordained minister part. What a balance to psychology, to education, administration, supervision, and then rounding it out with the spiritual side. So, Kenya, welcome to this inaugural podcast of Redefining Freedom, our 6th season. How are you today?
I'm doing all right, Sophia. It's a joy to have this opportunity to talk with you. Thank you.
Before we get into it, folks here who listen to the audio, it's a top podcast in politics and culture, and we're humbled by that on Spotify and Apple and wherever you download your podcast. But we did a video podcast, our first ever, And you'll be able to watch that on our YouTube channel. We'll have the links out because some people prefer video to audio. Mm-hmm. And I think we had a good dialogue there, Kenya, and we kind of set the table. But I want to get down into the meat of things on the audio. Give us your story. Tell us a little bit about what happened with you at your campus in the fall of 2023, and kind of bring us up to speed on where things are now. And let's talk about it in the context of how we see Black women in academia being treated writ large.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for the opportunity. So I'll start by saying that when I was about 20 years old, I worked on a campus where I saw people who were aspiring to a presidency going through training and preparation. And it just innervated me. I really, really thought, this is it. That's what I want to do with my future. And I had been going in a totally different direction. I was going to be like the greatest psychologist next to Sigmund Freud and like Fraser Crane. So to be in this position where I started thinking about something else was really exciting. And for many, many years after that, up until 2019, I was still in that building process. I was 50 when I was named president. And so to journey that long, almost three decades at the time, to come to the point of finally becoming a college president was a dream come true. And I have been working in the community college sector for my last two institutions with universities before that, but went through a lot of preparation to get to this place. In my first year, I had the pleasure, honestly, of navigating the campus through the pandemic. And over the next few years, bringing the campus out of that, rebuilding enrollment, and really working to build a team that could support our students in all of their needs, including growing mental health needs. I was hired by a chancellor, Dr. Eugene Giovannini, who brought me in with very clear expectations that I would be a change agent, that I would lead based upon my experience, and that I was leading with his full confidence. Unfortunately, in the early spring of 2021, Dr. Giovannini lost his position. There were accusations of misuse of power on his part on behalf of an alleged woman that he was involved with, an employee. And that led to an investigation of him because he was reprimanding this woman's supervisor, and that person became a whistleblower. And so suddenly the chancellor who hired me and had complete faith and confidence in me was no longer there. Shortly after that, there were three of us who were African-American women who were sort of handpicked by the chancellor. And all three of us are no longer at the college once there was a change with the chancellorship.
So let's put a pause there for a moment. Mm-hmm. In full disclosure to my listeners, I actually am working with Dr. Palmore on her matter. My team is helping with the strategic communications, which is in part why I wanted to have her on the podcast, aside from her amazing knowledge and her educational background and her experience as a college president, which is so rare for Black women, Black men in this country outside of HBCU. Mm-hmm. I think it's 1 in 10, Kenya, is that right? Is
That's
a Black
true.
College?
Women, and yes.
Mm-hmm. Women. And for Black professors, scholars, lecturers, adjunct professors, et cetera, mm-hmm. Our numbers are maybe 3-4% nationally overall when mm-hmm. you put all the colleges and all the professors' doctorates together. So I say all that to say that I don't want Kenya to get too much into the weeds of what happened to her, but what I do want her to do is what she's done, which is give you kind of a very important segue into this discussion, because I want you to understand that not only has she served as a president of a college through a historic global pandemic and successfully brought her team out, she serves on You're on the board of which now? Can you remind me?
Sure. The American Council on Education, which is the umbrella advocacy group for higher ed institutions across the nation, about 4,000 institutions.
Right. And I went through her credentials and I went through all this because I want you to know unequivocally that she is qualified. Qualified. Why am I saying that? Because one of the favorite argument of the detractors of Black women and Black men and Black people is that somehow none of us are ever qualified for the jobs we get, regardless of our degrees, regardless if we go to Ivy League schools, if we go to the best private schools, the best public schools, top of our class. You know, I got the second high score on the bar when I took it, you know, all those things. So I'm sure that somehow affirmative action and DEI must have done all that, right? And so there's this movement right now, Kenya, and it started with Dr. Claudine Gay. And we'll talk about her, but with respect to you and how you were handled, without getting into all the details, let's skip to the kind of how did you see others who were similarly situated to you, whether it was Dr. Giovanni or others, when there were mishaps, failures, obvious mess ups, not for not doing anything wrong, but when they actually did things wrong, how were those people handled when you had a seat at the table versus how you were treated? And to this day, still don't have reasons as to why you were handled in the way you were.
Sure. The most succinct way I can describe this is when an administrator is under some kind of concern, that person can be put on an administrative leave. And under certain circumstances, and for people who do not look like me, that is typically the case. Even recently, I've seen with the situation with Dr. Bailey, God bless and rest her soul, from Lincoln University, her president was accused of bullying her and creating a toxic work environment. She complained, got no results, and she ended up taking her own life tragically. But that president, who was her supervisor, was put on a paid administrative leave.
And he's a white male.
He was a white male, yes, leading an HBCU.
And so what I hear you saying is, and I'm just going to wrap this for the audience so that they're clear, so we can get down into talking about this and what we're going to do to fix it, is that when we are perceived in some manner, shape, or form to be either unacceptable, not doing what they want us to do, or somehow we are not qualified, or we're angry, or we're strident, or am I using enough of the words I use to describe us? I'm sorry. And so when we are somehow out of line, we haven't sexually harassed anybody, we're not sleeping with anybody at the job, we're not violating any of the rules in the handbook, you know, we're doing our job and often doing it with a lot more stress and duress and oftentimes less resources, you know, we are given the boot in very public ways that are very damaging to us, right? And when others, namely white men for sure, we've seen this from time immemorial, but even for our white female peers, all you have to do to know that I'm telling the truth here is you don't have to believe me or Dr. AP, as her kids like to call her on campus. All you have to do is look at Claudine Gay, Liz McGill at Penn, and the president of MIT's name escapes me. I think it's Sally Hobart or something like that. But the bottom line is that if you look at those three women, Kenya, and their testimony in December before the Congress about the horrific acts of anti-Semitism and violence on campus towards Jewish students, and you look at how it turned out, you tell me what you saw and how they were treated differently, and then ultimately what happened, and then let's get into the why and the how we're going to fix it.
Sure. So when I look at the situation, it's very clear that for each of those three women, the expectation of how they showed up was very different from how they showed up. We're talking in a couple of cases, presidents who have not been very long in the seat. It's a complex job with a lot of expectations. And sometimes the way I've described it to people is there are times when being in a presidency is met with almost like being at a boundary, and you don't know that you've hit the boundary or the barrier until you hit it, and then you're in a world of trouble. In this case, these three women spoke with legally accurate responses. They did not speak with empathy and in a way that was satisfying to Congress and people who were listening. There was a sense that they were without empathy for students. And I've shared with others that, you know, as a parent, you don't want to hear anything that suggests that your child is other than safe. You don't care about politics. You don't care about legalities. You just want safety for your child. And so, and protection. It's interesting when we talk about these three women, the president of Penn was the first to go down. Dr. Gay at Harvard had a very different situation, and we've seen this play out when they start to attack her scholarship, and we can talk about who they is. Sally Kornbluth at MIT is just starting to, she's sort of next in line, and she's starting to get pressure as well. What's the distinction for the African-American president who was leading Harvard is that it was personal attacks. It wasn't this person has failed to lead well. This person is not capable of understanding the heart and the needs of all of the constituents involved. In Dr. Gay's case, it was, again, is she qualified? Let's mount a campaign. And it really was a campaign, a targeted, coordinated effort to look at her writings, to see where she's fallen short, or to find anything by which to condemn her and to move her from the top spot of the institution.
And in that for a moment, because I think it's a good place to speak to this. And I think I can speak for Dr. AP here as well. She said this on the video podcast. Neither one of us, no academic I know anywhere, is in favor of plagiarism. Okay.
Oh, at all.
No. That's no brainer. So of course, scholarship matters. Of course, accurately citing your sources matter.
Sure.
But let me tell you what, baby. If we start conducting an investigation of every single college president and go back for the last 100 years, particularly without this newfangled software we have now,
right,
and you can load somebody's document in there and see where the citations are missed, I promise you, I've written 4 best-selling nonfiction books. Thank God for my editors. Thank God for my editors. God for my editor. I write a column on a national level for a number of national publications at least once or twice or more a month, and in a political season a lot more. And do I miss some punctuation and grammar? Do I miss some citations sometimes? Have I missed it? You bet. But again, thank God for the fact checkers and the editors. Now, the point I'm making is this, and Kenya, you know, let me know your thoughts here. What bothered me about what they did to Dr. Gay was not only did Bill Ackman and Rufo and those guys make it very clear they did not want a black female president at Harvard. They don't want a black person at Harvard. Right. These guys are anti-DEI, anti-woke, as they call it, anti-affirmative action, unless it's for white men like them. And when Bill Ackman's wife got caught, MIT graduate herself, plagiarizing, he was like, well, people should have empathy for her because she's not a bad person.
Right.
But
what's the difference?
The black woman and destroy the black woman, that's right. Okay. So bringing this back to my point, though, of plagiarism, we both know that, again, if we pulled up some of your work, my senior thesis, again, now 30 plus years ago, I promise you, I bet I missed some stuff. Not intentionally, use the best tools you have at the time. We didn't have the technology we have now. We didn't have the resources we have now to get things right.
Sure.
And so I say all that to say that what they did was they looked at anything and everything they could, but what they never found her guilty of ever in any of the allegations I saw was that she stole someone's work. And that's really what plagiarism is, right? It's I go and take passages out of Kenya's book and put it in mine and change a couple words and say that was
and
mine.
And make it mine, right?
Yeah, that's stealing. That's plagiarism, folks. Not, I didn't put the right MLA citation in the right place, or I took a paragraph and I did give attribution for it, but I didn't stick the footnote in the right place. So it might have looked like it was something I was taking. But if you look at how it's written, clearly I'm quoting someone. Those things happen a lot. Uh-huh. And so if we're going to do this thing and do it across the board, Kenya, am I correct that there would be a lot of college presidents out of jobs and deans and academics, or am I wrong?
I don't know how widespread it is, but I think you're on the right track. That I don't believe that this person who certainly worked very hard, you don't get to that place easily. You just said it's 387 years of history to be the one. You almost have to be perfect to get there. Yep. So I love the words that came up in the Chronicle of Higher Education recently. They talked about weaponizing plagiarism and the fact that, you know, Bill Ackman as a billionaire has sway in places that others do not. And his repeated calls for her to step down are just, they're just tragic and they're unkind. We talked earlier about consensus values. I grew up at a time, you grew up at a time where people were aligned about, you know, decency and integrity and humanity. Your point is so profound about Ackman's wife, meaning she was found to plagiarize and the comment was that she's a nice person. Are we suggesting that Gay is not? And of course, then what's the basis for that?
Here's what we're suggesting, and you dealt with this again without getting into too much of the weeds. And folks, I would tell you that there are a number you can read. There were a couple stories on, you know, Kenya's dismissal from TDDC. There is an investigation ongoing currently, which is why we're not going to say a whole lot about that at the moment. But I can tell you that there was clear retaliation. The lawyer and me and being intimately familiar with the details of what's going on here. And I feel confident that that's going to be found by the administrative review that's going on, as well as the investigation and any legal processes that follow. But I guess the point here, to your point, Kenya, is that when it comes to Black women, our humanity gets removed, and that's a problem. Now, you went through this in a way that they didn't fire you publicly. In fact, they did it under the radar. They kind of they withheld your contract, couldn't give you an explanation. Oh, you got one coming, but oh no, we're not going to give you one. And then you get these passive aggressive microaggression comments about they're always personal. Oh, you know, doesn't work well with the others. The tropes about us as Black women, we're always difficult. We're always strident. In my case, much like what happened to Dr. Gay at Harvard, what happened to me at Christopher Newport, I literally asked a question on Twitter about an LGBTQ plus comic book character in the middle of a gubernatorial race here that was decided on parental rights. The man who is now governor of Virginia, Glenn Youngkin, is a Christian conservative of the most extreme and was very clear about his lack of support for LGBTQ plus communities. His policies have been under attack as regressive on transgender students, etc. There's a whole lot that happened here. And I didn't see any protests of him. I didn't see protests of the people who actually would make the laws, but I sent a tweet and asked the question off campus, not in my classroom, not deriding or denigrating anyone, certainly never mentioning a student or a faculty member. I asked, what do Christian parents do if their child brings home this comic book? How do they talk about it? I suspect many of them wouldn't know how. I'm thinking, yeah, I'm going to have civil dialogue. We're going to debate it. We're going to talk about how do we deal with this in a society where parental rights movement, as you know, is huge in your state of Texas, mine of Virginia. Moms for Liberty, banning books, all this stuff is happening, people. And if we can't talk about it civilly and respectfully, I don't know where that ends us up. But Kenya, what happened to me was exactly the same. The backlash, the anger, the vitriol, the threats, the diminishing, the public humiliation, the protest. You would have thought I was in a classroom and said, I don't like gay people. They have no right to be in civil society. I mean, it was nothing even remotely close to that. Then I'm labeled a homophobe. Then it's in national media. It's in the local media. Now I don't get to work again in academia. That's right. I'm a pariah. I'm a, you got to watch her, man. She's no good. You know, these crazy religious conservative Black people, you know, she's not in line with the rest of us marginalized communities, which anybody who knows me knows that's ridiculous. But the point I'm making is we all get a public lynching. And I use that phrase because that's exactly what they did to me. And that's exactly what they did to Claudine Gay. And they do it under the pretext of, well, Claudine Gay is a plagiarist. So that's why we get to treat her this way. That's why we get to dehumanize her. That's why we get to destroy that Sophia Nelson. She's a homophobe. So that's why we can't have her here. And she can't be our first Black female scholar, as Gay can't be our first Black president. And you see, your thoughts on that, because Graham Kennedy spoke to that really powerfully when this was happening. And he broke down that that's what they've historically done to us to remove us from spaces they don't want us in. Your thoughts?
Yes, yes, and absolutely amen. I got a mouthful. Okay. So to your point about the perceptions and the labels that are put upon us, mine was angry. And people who know me, I'm like, I don't be angry. I'm like anti-angry, but it doesn't matter, because it's not about who a person is. It's about what perception someone else wants to put upon them in order to ostracize them, marginalize them, and otherwise eliminate them from seats of power.
There it is.
Yeah.
There it is. Yep. If you're a homophobe, you can forget about it. If you're angry, if you don't get along well with others, it kind of goes back to kindergarten, right? You know, everything I needed to know in life, I learned in kindergarten.
That's right.
Play of, like we talked about, these shared values of what you do and what you don't do. And now what we do that's also awful is when we disagree, I can't just disagree with you, Kenya, and say, well, maybe we see this differently and we're both grown academics with PhDs and we need to collaborate. No, instead, I got to ruin you. I have to destroy you. I have to make you a boogeyman because you don't see the world the way I do. And I think that's what Ackman and others really had against Claudine Gay. You agree or you disagree?
I agree. I think there was also more. So when we talk about what happened with her, people talk about it as what started with the congressional testimony. Actually, when Dr. Gay stepped into the role, there was such immediate polarization. There were those who were excited to have, you know, the second woman in leadership. Wow, a person of the global majority. This is exciting. What does this represent to professionals and students alike about what's possible? That leadership doesn't just look one way, that anybody who brings experience, expertise, and other qualifications to the table has the right to lead. I don't know what parents say to their children these days. Even as I've spoken out about this, I've had comments in my social media, someone saying, why do you focus on racism and sexism? And the question
is, they don't live it and they don't get it. And I say that to my white you. This podcast is interesting because 50% of my listeners are male and they're white men. Mm-hmm. And that's because I have a center right history as a former Republican. I'm a never Trumper and proud of it. But the thing is that, you know, I have an interesting demographic of listeners. And I say this to my white males and female listeners with love all the time. But do not talk to me about race and racism because you don't live it. You don't experience it. You don't have a clue what you're talking about. So this is one of those things that you should sit down quiet and try to learn and be empathetic and deal with yourself and your own biases that you do have, because we all have them.
We all do. But let me
No. Your thoughts?
I just was going to say two things. One, you cannot... You don't have the right to speak on someone's lived experience. It's just it is arrogant and it is condescending to do that. I love what Kendi said. To assume merit is the reason white people are overrepresented in positions of power and influence is to assume that white people are superior. To assume peoples of color in positions of power and influence are unqualified and unmerited is to assume peoples of color are inferior.
That's it in a nutshell. That is a great quote. I put it in my Substack. I was so upset that I had to get up and out of my system. I didn't want no editor. I don't want no editing. I don't want you telling me I see and what I live. But I want to wrap this up in the last few minutes. I want to talk about solutions. We've talked about the problem. We've talked about both in the visual and the video podcast and here on the audio. And I wanted to do two, and I wanted both because I wanted there to be a robust discussion about this. But, you know, I'm reminded of what my grandmother used to say to us when we were kids. You got to be twice as good, baby. Mm. Baby, you got to be twice as good. Mm-hmm. What do you mean, grandma? Well, you're Black. And you're a female, so you're going to have to be twice as good. Mm-hmm. Everything you do will have to be more excellent. It won't be enough just to be like everybody else. You can never get B's. You're going to need A's. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to put up with things that other people don't put up with, and you're going to have to grin and bear it and keep going. You can cry when you get home, or you can talk to your family. But did your grandma tell you anything similar to that?
My grandmother, my great aunts, my, you know, uncles, my father, my mother, absolutely. I mean, it's all just part of the indoctrination. That's right.
Right. All of us got that. And mm-hmm. I say all that to say, and I suspect our Jewish brothers and sisters might get a little of that as well, particularly depending on what age group they're in.
That's right.
Because of their horrific experiences through the Holocaust and the treatment. And again, we were reminded of how viral and vicious anti-Semitism is in this mm-hmm. country. Mm-hmm. These last months, it was a real wake-up call for me post the horrific attacks in Israel by mm-hmm. Hamas. Mm-hmm. To see that all playing out the way it is. But let's talk about solutions. I know that there's some things you want to do, Kenya, and I'm looking forward to them. Tell us a little bit about what you see as the way forward. How do we deal with this still very clear, you know, Black women are still paid less, mm-hmm. even though we have the same credentials, so there's a pay gap.
That's
there's
right.
an advancement gap. There's a retention gap. There's a hiring gap in academia. What's the way forward?
So I feel like we have been positioned for a long time as responsive to the treatment that's inflicted upon us. You know, it's not lost on me that we're doing this for Martin Luther King Day. Mm-hmm. One thing that, and there are many things, of course, but one thing that Dr. King stood for that is enduring, it's this notion of the right of self-determination. You don't tell me where I have to sit. You don't tell me where I can eat. I have certain inalienable rights and I plan to exercise them. But there was joy and there was power in the collective organization of people. It is time for Black women in particular, women and women of the global majority to come together and to develop our own manifesto for what it is that we declare is appropriate for us, not what somebody else thinks is appropriate, and to outline the path forward. No more talking about the problems, no more lamenting. And I'm a part of a lot of groups, women's groups, groups for women of color, groups for higher ed professionals. We do a lot of talking about what the problems are, and we're really good, I'll just say, in my area in higher ed administration, we're really good at measuring our progress or really the lack thereof. It's time for us to say, in light of this, now what? And the now what that I'm proposing is we're going to work together to bring the top thinkers mm-hmm. around these efforts to help lead a discussion where we co-create the path forward. So look mm-hmm. for an upcoming summit. Look for mm-hmm. a chance for us to really represent the interests. I'm working on a book and mm-hmm. we'll have that out soon. But it's really time to focus on what I call triaging what's happening with leadership today and then developing the path forward. It really is, what are the institutions we want to create? What are the ways that we strategically put forward a slate and then put some support around the women that are in these roles? We also, on a micro level, have to deal with self-care and really engage in what you've described as sort of that radical self-care that's essential for forward momentum. The last thing I would say is that we have to work across sectors. A good friend, Dr. Damon Williams, is a leading expert on diversity, equity, and inclusion.
I saw his piece that he did. It was good.
Yeah, his work is phenomenal. And he's been doing it for a long time. He's got a PhD in organizational development from Michigan, has the qualifications. But I would say this, that he's talking about, we've got to see the bigger picture. We're talking about an ecosystem of efforts to meet that and to counteract it, we have to have an ecosystem of forward momentum and progress. And that's what we'll be developing together through this summit.
I'm in, as you know, we're working on all of this collaboratively. It's going to be amazing. We're going to have corporate folks, academics, thinkers, but also leaders. I mean, I'd like to be somebody like Melinda Gates and Mackenzie Bezos and others be involved, as well as philanthropists, because they have the resources, like you said, to help create these women's centers, these structures, et cetera, so that women of color are represented too. Let me speak to that as I close. First, Kenya, thank you for being with us for the video and the audio. I would be remiss if I did not bring up the name of Dr. Bonnie Bailey, who tragically took her own life after suffering bullying, humiliation, violence against her as a Black woman, not physical, but emotional violence, which is soul-wrenching and soul-destroying, and it breaks us. And that mental health piece, that wellness piece, is why I wrote my last book. And, you know, it is understanding, again, as Black women, we have been uniquely and badly taught from the time we were little girls that care for everyone else but ourselves,
that's
that we are to suffer every indignity, every ugly thing that's thrown at us, every bit of violence, and because we are supposed to protect our Black men and protect this and not upset that and not do this and whatever, and it is destroying us. And it is time for us to do something different, my sisters, because self-care matters. If you don't love you, like you, and respect you first, they never will. And let me say this, that sisters, I need to address you for a moment. The numbers tell a story. Affirmative action, if we're telling the truth, helped white women advance. The last 40 years of gains for affirmative action in academia, in the law, in medicine, in industry, in STEM, out of the Fortune 500 right now, 52 white women are CEOs. There is no Black female CEO because Rosalind just left Walmart. Okay? And before her, it was just Ursula Burns at Xerox, okay?
That's right.
So when I look at the numbers, when I look at the wealth gap, white women are ascending, and we're happy for them. But where is your allyship? Where is, and I've been hard on Sheryl Sandberg about Lean In, because there were literally three sentences in her book about women of color. Because you are an upper middle class, Ivy League educated white woman who's married, you have economic security, all the things that most Black women do not, regardless of their education. So your experience is vastly different than ours. That's the first thing. The second thing I want to say is to our white female peers in academia, fellow professors, deans, administrators, presidents, it was a white woman, Kenya, that took me out at CNU. It was a white bisexual woman who, instead of having a conversation and coming together, which is what everybody wanted to do, which is what should have been done, I wasn't obligated to do it because they were under no right or ability as a public school to limit my speech or to tell me that I can't have a religious point of view or anything. That's illegal, as we both know. But instead of having a conversation, she chose to start a riot, to get a mob, to make the workplace untenable and hostile, to drag students in and manipulate and use them, to get the help of LGBTQ plus groups, and to get them involved and make this something that it never was. And it's because of an agenda. Now, we can call that Karenism and whatever these phrases are that people use now. But white women, you got to check yourselves here, because you're really ascending and you're doing well now and you've reached parity. But your sisters of color, your brown sisters, your Black sisters, your Native American sisters, and your Asian sisters are nowhere near where you are. And that's because you have white skin. That's because you have white skin. You might not want to believe that, but it's the truth. And so, Kenya, I wonder if maybe you might speak to that allyship, that intersectionality that is very important, I think, as we try to find a way forward.
This is a season for unity in the face of all of the division and polarization swirling around us. If we don't work together, people, I don't care about your political party. I don't care about the color of your skin. Some of the people who have been the most helpful mentors for me or sponsors for me didn't look like me. They just saw me as a person and a professional and wanted to open doors for me. Allyship is so essential because none of us makes it all on our own. We use the term women of the global majority because when you look at those numbers of all of those groups you just described collectively, it takes all of us working together. And then again, with allies who will say, that's not right, that's not fair, to call out the work that is done that really is harmful to women of color. And so, yes, we're all in this together.
All right, folks, listen, happy MLK Day. Kenya, again, thanks for joining us for two really powerful podcasts, a visual one and an audio one. I hear the kitty cat. Is that what I hear?
That's the puppy. He's ready to play. I apologize. Yeah,
he's loving up on mommy. I get it. I was like, I hear something. But listen, thank you. We have a big road ahead of us, a great road ahead of us, and I'm looking forward to it.
Me too. Let's go. Thank you.
Take care, my. Bye-bye.
You too, dear. Bye-bye.